Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Tom Davis here, host of the No Bad Dogs podcast. Thank you, as always, for joining me today, and I appreciate you so much for listening. If you guys like this podcast or you enjoy it to any regard, it's absolutely for free, and we spend tons of time putting this together for you guys. If you could do me a solid favor, my Christmas wish, if you will, go over and review the podcast in whatever you're listening to this to, Spotify or iTunes. And remember, at the end of the podcast, I'll be answering three of your dog training questions in specific. So three of you guys, the listeners, if you guys have questions about your dog and you want to know my opinion on it, go to the iTunes review chart, leave a review and a question in there. You can't do it on Spotify because Spotify doesn't allow you to do anything except review. But if you are listening to this on Spotify, do me a solid favor and review the podcast. Again, it's absolutely for free for you guys. I would appreciate that a lot to help us continue to grow and spread the good word. This is a wonderful podcast with a dog owner. And I say this a lot, but I record a lot of my consulting service questions. And just so everybody knows, when you guys are hearing these conversations, these are conversations from my consulting service that we have, that we do obviously every week. And everybody who signs up gets an email that says, hey, we're going to record this and potentially use it for things, but I don't use everything. I only want to give you guys the good stuff that I think you're going to find beneficial. And this is a dog owner who I think is going to resonate with so many of you with a reactive, fearful, aggressive dog. You can just hear in her voice how desperate she is for help and for change in the most beneficial, healthy way. She knows that the dog is capable of doing the things, and she knows that she's capable of achieving these goals. She just needs direction. And so this is a classic, just sit down with the dog owner and helping her through her emotions and helping her get on track. And it's a wonderful, beautiful conversation, in my opinion. And I think you guys are going to find it very beneficial. There's some things that I say and go over in this podcast that I've never done before. And so I hope you guys enjoy it. Don't forget, at the end of the podcast, we're going to be going over three of your dog training questions. And all my courses, my brand new coffee that we just launched, all in the link in the description below. I appreciate you guys and your support. And let's get into the podcast.
Okay, fantastic. Well, it's so lovely to meet you.
Likewise. So what do you got going on?
So I have a very lovely 130-pound Cane Corso Rottweiler and Golden Retriever mix. His name is Denver. He is about 2.5 years old. He's my best friend. He's my loyal protector. But we've had a very hard 2.5 years. I dove headfirst into getting a breed that I did not understand. And I can't really tell you why I did it. Growing up, I always had this idea that I would get a big, tough dog so that I could feel protected. My ex-boyfriend had a Rottweiler Chow, and I feel like I just bond with certain breeds more than others. So I took that on myself. But I think it was a bit of COVID crazy as well, because, I got him from a backyard breeder. There was a bit of a puppy frenzy at the time. So I was throwing myself at any dog that would listen. And I almost got an American Bully. Didn't work out. Then Denver popped up on my page. And I really thought, okay, the Golden is going to neutralize all the intensity of the other two breeds. And I was really wrong. I honestly think it made it worse because he's got the curiosity and playfulness of a golden mixed with the confrontational, intense behaviors of the other two breeds. So yeah, it's been a whirlwind for me. I've learned so much about myself and about my abilities to raise a living thing, but I feel like I've screwed up a lot. And although we feel like we're at the other end of things, if I were to speak to you a year ago, Tom, I would have been in tears. But I worked really hard with him and we're at a really good place. But I can't help but feel like the screw-ups I had while he was growing up have made him, he hasn't reached his full potential. So I think that's why I'm here today. That's the big thing, is I feel like I've let him down. And he's pretty antisocial now. So there's just some behaviors that I wanted to speak to you about today, but I'll leave you with that first little intro to Denver and maybe get some of your thoughts on what I've said about my journey so far. I'm sure you hear it all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's anything that has Corso in it is typically a challenge for some people just because they're challenging dogs. And so yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that you're running into certain things. I'm not sure what they are yet, but it doesn't surprise me. They can be pretty difficult dogs to work with. So, it's good though. I mean, your attitude towards the whole thing is good. I think that a lot of people have a hard time understanding that the things that they're dealing with and the dog's behavior is out of nowhere or whatever. So it's good that you have that mentality of understanding that, you should have got help before, or maybe it would have helped. Now you're ready to get more help. So I'm interested to see what your problems are and the things that you're struggling with.
Yeah, cool. I appreciate you saying that because so I've worked with a few trainers. I almost think I've worked with too many trainers because I was trying to find my training identity or philosophy. And I didn't know what that looked like because so much was being thrown at me. And I couldn't even walk down the street without a neighbor coming out and being like, "Why don't you have an easy walk harness on him? Why do you have a prong collar on him?" And I like it was just opinions everywhere from trainers and non-trainers. So I first worked with a trainer that taught me how to use the prong. He was a really great trainer, but Denver didn't really respond well to him. It was kind of this fear, like we'd walk into the room and Denver would just be like shaking and just really off. And it didn't feel right. So it didn't feel like a great fit. Then I worked with a balanced trainer that was really great on the onset, but then focused far too heavily on treat training, and Denver didn't respond to it, especially when I'll get into some of his behaviors, but kind of the main thing with Denver behavior-wise, when he is confronted by another dog, it could be the smallest confrontation. It could be a dog just even fixating on him for less than a second. His whole energy will change. So he'll go from, walking with me, having a good time, to tense, his hair standing up, his mouth almost clenched. And he will not let that dog anywhere closer to him without growling. I do use an e-collar, and I use your e-collar, the No Bad Dogs Dogtra. I'm able to get him out of that fixation, but just with his pure strength, there are often times where I'm pulling him and I'm almost falling over to get him away from those situations. That's the biggest behavior challenge I have with him is male aggression. He's wonderful with female dogs, even new ones. But any male dog that's around his age or younger, it is war. I do muzzle him when we go into public places where I do imagine there to be other dogs because I feel like I'm not able to enjoy my dog and I'm at this way, I'm okay. Do I keep him at home and just have him all to myself, or can I share him with the world? But the world's not going to welcome him because, they stare at him when he has a muzzle on. when he doesn't, they're like, why don't you have a muzzle on him? He's aggressive. And it feels like I can't win. And I know it sounds crazy because I feel like he is a good dog, but I feel like I say that and people just look at me and they don't believe me. And they don't see the side of him that I see. So anyways, rant and kind of all over the place, but
yeah, no, it's all valid stuff to be thinking of. That's what I'm saying is like your headspace is in the right place. Like you're the best type of client to work with because you want to shift and you want to take that direction, but you've already done your research. And I think what you said about it's first time that I've been thinking this for a little bit, but it's the first time a client has said it. And when you're trying to, as far as like what type of training to and what type of training that you're doing, you don't really want to, as a dog owner and as a, in my opinion, as a professional, I personally don't like to fit in boxes either. And I don't like to have this, this is where I'm at. I think we should all be thinking on our feet and trying to figure out which way we're going to go and what's going to work. And so that's why it's interesting when you said that you were trying to figure out what training style is going to work best and how you're going to be kind of characterized, that you don't really want to be into that. I forget what word you use, but you don't want to be in that really. You want to be switching gears. And if you're in a space that is healthy for you and you feel that your dog is progressing and you're happy with what you're seeing, then that's all really you need. I mean, there's always ways to get better, but don't feel like you have to find that type of thing. I mean, it's just a constant evolution of figuring out what works for you, what works for your dog, and trying to figure out what's going to make you guys the happiest. And so that's good that you have that state of mind. But I will kind of help direct you in a sense of don't try to find that one camp that you fit in and categorize yourself at. And as I think you said, identify, because I see that a lot in the dog world, especially from professionals too. They'll say like, oh, I'm this type of trainer, I'm this type of trainer, which is, it's really just trying to identify to let other people know how you do things, which is okay to a certain extent, but the clients, as in you, aren't going to really know what that is. So if you see somebody that's like, I'm a X type of trainer, or I'm a Y type of trainer, or I'm this type of trainer, they're identifying as something instead of just trying to say like, hey, I'm helping dogs. And so it's kind of like this virtue signaling of this is who I am, and everything else around it's completely like politics. It's like, this is who I am. And so try not to, I'm just, the way that you said that was really nice. And I don't really talk about it, but that identification of how you want to train, you shouldn't be wearing as a flag or want to wear it as a flag, because that means that you're set in your ways. That literally means like, this is me. I'm never going to change. Even if something comes along that is completely better or changes over time, this is me. So it's good that you're trying to stay open. I just want to point that out. That was really nice. And it's healthy too. So is he fixed?
He is. I did neuter him late. He was about 2 years and 3 months when I neutered him. And he went through a really, really wild regression period after that. He turned into, it was uncontrollable. Like, I couldn't take him anywhere. He couldn't even go to he goes to a kennel for daycare every now and then. I couldn't take him there. He was pulling people to the ground, just super, just off. He was, his whole personality, his whole demeanor changed. And I know, like, I've heard people say there's a spike in the testosterone or whatever it might be. So I was expecting a little bit of a change, but he turned into a dog I really did not recognize. And I feel like I screwed up, because I used to go to dog parks a lot. I mean, I had like a 50-pound puppy at like 5 months that had endless energy. And I went to an off-leash dog park. It wasn't a fenced dog park. It was like one of those trail dog parks. So as much alone time as we got, there were obviously a lot of dogs running through the woods as well. And he got picked on a lot. Once he reached kind of that adolescent period. He would get pinned a lot, mounted a lot, and he would take it. And you know, me being an inexperienced dog owner too, I didn't really know what to do. So I would just kind of be like, oh, let's go, Denver, let's go. And then one day he fought back, and he was pretty intense about it, and it was a pretty big scene, and I stopped going. But I can't help but shake the feeling that I screwed up, and I let him go through too much, and I turned him into this like antisocial version of himself. And maybe if I hadn't have done that, and I would have made his interactions with other dogs more pleasant, he wouldn't be so shut off from the rest of the world. And that's a big insecurity of mine. I can't believe I went to dog park so much and let him go through that, because I feel like I really did some damage. I don't know your take on that, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's natural to feel like that. I would say dog parks in general just can be difficult for dogs. I mean, don't get me wrong, some dogs love it, some dogs enjoy it, some dogs thrive in it. And I always tell people that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when something happens. And it doesn't matter if it's your dog being the aggressor or not. I always tell people it's like a public pool. Like, don't complain about things when you're going to the public pool, because you don't control anything. You don't control who comes in. You don't control anything. And so it's difficult to be successful in that environment. And it's totally normal and natural. And I give a lot of empathy and compassion and understanding for dog owners who do these things, because if I wasn't who I am as far as a professional and done my research. And really, it's not as much about research in the dog space as it is about experience. So if you could do, I mean, you already know this, you could go online and pretty much find anything that will meet your what you want to see, what you want to hear. We all know that. But it's really more about experience, and that's where a lot of my education has come into with dogs, is dog owners coming in. I mean, I've been just doing this for so long that the amount of stories and the amount of experiences that I have, it has given me a lot of education. So the amount of dog owners that my dog loved the dog park, and then Joe Schmo came in and their dog attacked my dog, now my dog is whatever. So don't beat yourself up over that, because a lot of people run into those situations all the time, and it's totally a normal. I mean, how great does that sound? Like a dog park, and you're a dog owner who loves your dog, and you love other dogs, and you'd want your dog to have fun and socialize. And but understanding that there's kind of forced socialization on dogs, which is what dog parks typically breed, and then there's healthy, neutral socialization, which we can talk about, but don't beat yourself up over that, because it's something that so many dog owners do. And until they have a bad experience, and that's typically what happens, right? Same thing with you about your training and the things that you've done, is you'll have an experience that you may feel uneasy about, and then you'll go online and realize, like, oh, there's all these other people who are either not doing well with dog parks or doing well with this type of training, whatever. So don't worry about that too much. But I think it's just a matter of time if your dog were to not like dogs now, I mean, or have an aggression towards other dogs. It's what I think it is from what you've told me so far is dogs. So we don't really know for sure. I've talked to a couple different veterinarians about this, breeding specialists about this. There's no exact thing that tells you, like, the only thing that we know about getting your dog fixed is it takes away all the testosterone. And so, I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff. I'm speaking very neutrally just across the board. But once your dog, here's my experience, is once your dog hits sexual maturity and they fully come into themselves as an adult, they Once you fix them after that, they can either kind of decrease into this slum of, I felt a certain way for so long and I started to become like an adult and now I feel different, and it can regress some of the behavior a little bit. But again, like that's normal. A lot of people wait for their dog to be fully mature so they can get all the benefits of the dog being structurally and orthopedically healthy. So I did that with my Saint Bernard when he was around. He lived until he was 12, and I never fixed him. But he lived such a healthy life for a Saint Bernard orthopedically. So even when he was, when he was on his 12th year, which is significantly old for a Saint Bernard, he was beautiful. Like I remember, I would bring him into the vets, and they would be amazed like how he moved. And I think a lot of that has to do with his diet, which is raw food, and then his overall healthy bones, right? Because I didn't fix them. And that's something that can, again, this is like a very gray thing, because listen, anything I think in the world is going to be, you're going to have one person over here saying this thing, and then you have one person over here saying this thing, and then they're going to constantly argue for the rest of the time. And then the people in the middle, which are you and I, the people who really, I don't want to say the people who matter, but the opinions that actually matter are people who you and I, who are out here just trying to navigate a healthy life with our dog. You know, I don't really care if you're right. I don't really care if you're right. I just want to solve an issue. So that's something I've just seen through experience, just so you know, is one, because you fixed him at two. So you fixed him recently, kind of. Yeah. So if you fixed him recently and he kind of had this weird, holy shit, what's going on? I mean, it makes total sense, because it's kind of like fully coming into yourselves as an adult, and then all of a sudden things change like drastically, and you feel different, and your emotions are different, and your hormones are acting different, and it's all these different things that are happening. So it makes sense where he got a little weird and he's like acting out of character. But sometimes, and this is why it's an interesting topic, because so many dogs react differently. Like, that's why, again, if you research or you ask a professional, and I'll tell you even, like, it's hit or miss. Like, you just flip a coin. Sometimes it makes dogs chill and mellow and kind of calm down. Sometimes it makes it, like, worse, and it makes it the dog more vulnerable, and it makes the dog feel more insecure. Sometimes you don't notice anything, and it's really not consistent. That's why I think people are just kind of sticking to the science of what actually happens with the dog, of like, oh, obviously he doesn't have any testosterone anymore. That's something that we know. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, but like, how is he going to behave after that is really predicated off of him. So, but I've also seen in my experience that once dogs, again, fully get to that mature level, they're already past the point of being okay with other intact males in specific. But it sounds to me that if it's a male on male thing, it's probably more of that, like him being intact for as long as he did, because that's, if it's that consistent with males, it's like only males. And sometimes it's even only intact males, which is a thing too. Like, that's something that my Saint Bernard, again, like, I use him as an example because he was a big dog, 150-pound intact male, and he developed issues towards other dogs as he matured, but it was only certain dogs, and then it became like all dogs. So right now, to recap just a little bit, so you are struggling with bringing him out, because I know that you said like he's wearing a muzzle for his safety, but is he aggressive at all towards other people, or is it just dogs?
So he did go through a phase where men, human men that he didn't know, it was a sore spot for him. So he, and it would always be with me at the other end of the leash, right? Mm-hmm. And if, you know, my boyfriend was out with him, he was okay with other people, but with me, he would kind of get his guard up when, you know, a man walked by that he didn't know. Just kind of that tense body language that I was speaking about when it came to the male dog interactions, but never showed any like real signs of reactivity to people. He has a bit of stranger danger. Like, he's not the golden retriever that's running up and getting butt scratches from everybody, but he's polite, and I'm really grateful for that, because then I can, you know, I can take him into a room with humans, And he does focus on me. He does have that, okay, I'm with mom, I want to sit with mom. I've worked really well with him in terms of building that bond of you know, eyes on me, looking to me for direction. And that's really because of your videos, not really because of any trainer I've worked with, but it was the exact thing. If I had a problem, I looked on your channel, I looked up the problem, and I tried to find a video that, you know, was going to get into that problem. And then I worked from there. I built up from there. I built it into my training sessions. For a 130-pound dog, I mean, he walks fantastic on a leash because of the prong, because of the e-collar. I'm really blessed for building that connection with him. But yeah, his problem area is not really with people, but he's not crazy about people either. He likes his people, but that's about it. And like you said, like the whole thing about getting him neutered, you know, to be completely transparent, I was avoiding it at all costs. I didn't want to do it. I don't think people really talk about. Some people say, oh, I regret not neutering my dog. But for me, it's like I kind of regret doing it, and I can't pinpoint why. But I didn't want to. I try to give him the healthiest life possible. And I almost feel like to a fault sometimes, because I always am trying to strive for making him healthier, making him happier, giving him a better, well-rounded life. But that's not always going to be possible, I think. And I have to let some of that go. Like for me, I feel like I'm depriving him of a balanced life if he's not able to go out without his muzzle. But what does that really mean? Like, why am I putting that standard onto myself and onto Denver when it's just providing him a healthy outlet? And, you know, I've trained him on the muzzle well. Like, he likes his muzzle. He walks right into it. I had a positive association the same way I built that training with the e-collar. But people don't see that. And then it's like I'm getting all these stares and I'm waiting for something bad to happen with another dog. And he feels that energy off of me. So even if he's good with other people, which he is to the, you know, most of the time, he's still feeling that weird energy off of me. And is it going to get to a point where my lack of confidence is going to be the reason that he snaps? I think that's where my insecurities come down. I walk out of the house, I see a dog that he doesn't like, I see a bus, which he hates buses. And then I look straight, I see a neighbor that, oh, he doesn't really know. And then I'm just standing there. I'm like, where do I go? Like, what direction can I go where I feel comfortable? I don't have one. I'm going to go back in the house and I'm going to wait and I'm going to come out 10 minutes later, or I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive 20 minutes into the country and walk in a random field. Like, that's at the point where I was, and I still kind of am. If I'm expressing it and I'm getting all ranty about it, it's because I still care. I don't know what way to go. And it's, I could go to a place where everyone accepts him and everyone's okay with the muzzle. And they think, oh, wow, Athena, you're doing such a great job and he's so good. I still feel that like something bad's going to happen. And it's going to be because of me, because who else in here is accountable? No one. Like, I got this dog, and people always say to me, like, well, you went and got that dog? Like, really? Like, that's the dog you want to get? And I've kept all these feelings for 2.5 years. And it's that every time I leave the house, where do I go? Where can I go where my dog is accepted, where I'm accepted? And is something bad going to happen? Am I going to make it home today and he's going to have a bite history? Even with the muzzle, is he going to get out of it in some way? Like, it's those insecurities are penalizing my relationship with my dog. And, you know, they affect my relationships in life. Like, my boyfriend's always like, he's fine, he's a great dog. Like, why are you so tense? Why are you so anxious? And he doesn't understand, you know, like, if something happens, it's on me, and I want to protect him. I don't want someone coming after him. So anyways, that was super, super ranty. But I think a lot of my problems with him might actually be my problems with myself. And then he feeds off of that, I think, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, it's not ranty at all. It's how you should be expressing yourself, because that's the problems. Like, when you talk, you're going to, put out what you're really concerned about. And if you didn't do that, then I wouldn't really be able to help you. So it's all good. So I think it's a natural fear that dog owners have. I think to answer your question in two parts, the you seeing how your dog can be in a physical way, can give you anxiety throughout other things. That's what a lot of people don't see. Like, there's a lot of people who don't see dogs correcting other dogs. They don't see other dogs getting into dog fights and things like that, and it could be pretty traumatic. And so that's something that I wish more people understood, is there's a lot of, like, you yourself have seen what your dog is capable of, and you've seen things go wrong, not really in a terrible way. I mean, I've had conversations with people that it's really traumatic, like really traumatic, things that you would never even dream about in a bad way. It's bad. And so I think that's just how we are as humans. You see something happen, or you feel like something can happen. So it's two things. Is you need to be working with somebody that can give you your confidence back, because that's what I do with my clients. Is when people come in and they are feeling the way that you do, and I'm like, I want you to just walk to the other wall. And you're like, yeah, but there's a dog there. I'm like, just walk. And then you go and you do it and you practice it. It gives you the confidence, because in order for your dog to really steam forward with confidence, you're going to have to push the envelope with him, because he's not going to be able to get better unless you get better, because you're the only one that's really holding that situation back. And you're probably giving him all of these mixed signals. So his security is predicated off of your security. So the first place you have to start is with you. And that's why we're starting to get into a different world of the dogs, where there's a lot of professionals out there, including myself, that are much more than dog trainers, right? We're therapists, we're artists, we are much more than just teaching your dog how to sit and down. It's when somebody comes in with a problem with their dog and they feel like you do, somebody needs to be able to say, look, put your arm down, breathe, look forward, keep your eyes straight, walk forward, and then put, you know, just coaching you through how to behave is really a piece of it. So that's the first thing I would say, is it's totally normal for a dog owner to come in with that one incident under your belt where you're like, oh, this one time this happened and now I think it's going to happen all the time, which is human. That's what makes us human. That's the reason why our brain works the way it does, to keep us safe, right? And anytime that we get hurt in any way, emotionally or physically, our brain is supposed to have these stoppers that say, like, hey, remember last time? And so if your dog had a bad experience, and then when you go out and then in your head you're thinking about all the ways it could go wrong, I think that that's a human thing. It's not a you thing. It's just how other people – I think about that. See, here's the thing, is like, I think about that every day, because I know what dogs are capable of, and I know dogs on a different level than other people because this is my career. For an example, just for Christmas, 2 days ago now or whatever, my mom came over and she has a little Shih Tzu and I have my Dutch Shepherd Lakota, and she wanted to feed my Dutch Shepherd Lakota food, you know, from the table and from the cooking. And I'm like, you got to stop. I'm like, you know, my mom doesn't listen to me regardless, but I think that's just a grandma thing. And I'm like, mom, you got to stop. And she didn't. I just want to give you an example of I think like this too, because she doesn't understand that. She thinks I'm like, she can't have a carrot, or she can't have a piece of bread or whatever. She, in her head, that's what she's thinking I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about her feeding my dog something and then her dog running up and then sitting there and then the two dogs getting into it because they're begging for food. It has nothing to do with the product of what you're giving my dog. It's because you don't understand that the circumstances that you're creating and the tension that you're creating could make these two have a problem with one another, which you're not thinking of, but I am, because A, this is what I do for a living and I've seen it a bazillion times, but B, I also know what it looks like for a big dog to attack a smaller dog, and it's not pretty. And so don't think of it in a way that you're like, you have these anxieties of like, every time I go out, I'm almost thinking of like, what could go wrong? And that's why I train the way that I do. I say that in a video that I was recently editing. And when we were in Colorado, I always say, like, in my head, I'm always thinking of what's the worst that could happen when I'm training my dog in reality? Not for obedience training, because that's just fun. But if I go outside and my dog is off leash, in my head, I'm thinking, what could go wrong here, right? And then that's why I train with remote collars. Or if I'm walking a very powerful dog, or my client is walking a very powerful dog, and I'm thinking in my head, what could go wrong here? Oh, well, this dog could drag this owner down the road and get put into the ER, like one of my clients did in Oregon, because they were on a harness, until they figured out what a prong collar was. So don't think of it as a bad thing. You're just being responsible because you care. Now, the muzzle thing that you're kind of working on is hard for you just because of the stigma of what it could represent to other people. If a dog is muzzled, that means they're aggressive. And, you know, recently I've been talking about, like, the muzzle is for your dog, not for anything else. Like, the muzzle is to keep your dog safe. And that's that. Like, I did this new account called Dude with a Dog Sign. So we've been making, like, these dog sign, like, passive aggressive signs. And one of them that we were gonna do that we didn't was, my dog's wearing a muzzle because of you. And that's, like, something that people don't realize, that the muzzle is on the dog to help them be safe. So you need confidence, which is only gonna come from you doing something, hopefully with a coach that can guide you through scenarios to say, look, you did it, good job. And you're like, oh. And then the other thing is you'll need somebody to help put you through these environmental tests to see what the exact triggers are for your dog. So those two things are what everyone really needs. You come in, you go, yeah, my dog is misbehaving and they're never going to get better, or I don't think they're going to get better, or I'd be really happy if they got better, or whatever. So that's pretty much what I do, is I say, I'm going to work on you, and then I'm going to work on your dog. Because when, like, if you watch my videos, when people come in, the first thing I do is I say, let me see you, like, walk around with your dog. And that's typically what ends up happening. Is even, like, the other day I did a FaceTime like this, and the owner, I was like, just go grab your dog. And because sometimes the connection via Wi-Fi is terrible and it's, like, really bad, but sometimes it's good like this. I'm like, go grab your dog and let me just, and, like, within 3 seconds, I was like, that right there is, like, the problem. So you need somebody to help give you the confidence back by just simply teaching you what to do, A, and B, walk you through, like, hey, this is okay. Like, you're good. Like, this is totally normal. Like, this happens all the time. And then I think if I were to add, like, a third thing for your success and your roadmap to making your life the happiest it could be with your dog, is control and obedience. Because if your dog is controlled and obedient, then you can really do anything that you want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I think that a lot of that has been a struggle, just because Denver is super hard-headed, super stubborn. He wants to do things on his agenda. And if something isn't going the way he wants it to go, everyone in the room will know, because, you know, he starts acting out. And that's something that we've gotten better, but there's a long way to go. And I think that helps my confidence when I know that I can go somewhere and he's focused on me rather than everything else going on. Or if he does get focused on something else, I can bring him back in a way that's not too confrontational to the point where he's going to start freaking out or I'm going to start freaking out. And that's what the e-collar has helped me with. And that leash pressure, I've worked a lot with that, but there's a long way to go. Because if I can control him in those instances, I think that confidence can get built up naturally on my end. And I think that something that maybe I want your piece on before we finish off is, how do I just learn to acknowledge that my dog is just probably not going to be the friendliest dog ever? And when is that okay? Because I see how great he is. Other people might not see it. That's part of the situation sometimes. But how do I learn to accept that he is who he is and I can work on things, but I might not ever be able to bring him around another male dog with no reaction whatsoever. Any like kind of words of advice there? Like, is it okay to just be like, this isn't who he's gonna be, and that's all right? Like, when can I just accept that? Or is that something that is something I'm probably never gonna be able to accept?
Yeah, well, I think yeah, that's something that is totally normal for dog owners. They just don't know that again, that they don't know that that's acceptable, and that's where again my experience comes in, because not every dog is going to be like not every dog is going to like other dogs, and that's just part of being a dog owner. But again, there's just like this false thing out there that it's like, and I think it's again, I think it's a natural thing that dog owners have, is they're like, oh, my dog has to be friendly, my dog has to go to dog parks, my dog, blah, blah, blah. But it's not until somebody like myself, who is an expert in dog behavior, can say to you, like, no, they don't need friends, they probably don't want friends. Some dogs do, some dogs don't. And this isn't even from like a training standpoint, this is somebody who has a daycare, had managed a daycare years and years and years ago. Like, I have so much experience in dogs interacting with one another, and it's like a flip of a coin. Like, 50% of the time, a dog owner will come in for a daycare eval and they don't like it. And the dog owners, like yourself, are very torn up. They're like, I don't understand. Like, what's wrong? Is there anything we could do? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this is not, it's like going on dates. It's like you go on a date with somebody that you don't know, or that you don't know that well, and it doesn't go good. And you're like, is it me? What did I not wear something right? Did I not sit down right? Like, it's like you can't think like that. Like, it's not realistic. And that's where I think a lot of people have a hard time, is just understanding fundamentally that not all dogs are gonna like other dogs. And I think that that's a big misconception. Just like, I think it's just education is what it comes down to, is like having education around these topics will really help dog owners' mental state of mind. Again, with the muzzle or with the prong collar, the e-collar, it all the lack thereof, the education is why anybody feels a certain way about these things. Like, you could say, hey, the muzzle keeps my dog safe and alive, and there's going to be somebody out there that's like, I'd rather see your dog dead than wear that muzzle. And you're like, are you crazy? And you're like, yes, they are crazy. And that's, but you can't let that, get you down. So I guess my point is your dog is going to be completely fine and happy to have one or two friends and not really care. Like, my dog is the same way. Like, Lakota, when she's out and about, like, she doesn't meet any other dogs ever, just because she doesn't want to. She doesn't like to. It's not because she's aggressive or I want to be antisocial. It's just she doesn't like to meet other dogs, and that's nothing that anybody has ever done. That's just her personality, and that's totally okay. So there's many dogs that are like that, but I think dog owners need to understand that you're not doing them disjustice. You're not suppressing their potential. You're not, I mean, if your dog simply, now there's also a way to proof these things out, to see if that's actually what's going on. Like, you can try to figure out, is your dog fearful of other dogs? Does your dog like certain dogs and not other dogs? I mean, there's plenty of ways where you can proof things out to figure out what, your dog likes and doesn't like. Because that's the thing too, is if your dog is selective about who they like and who they don't like, you're gonna basically cut off all dogs, because you're like, I don't want there to be a problem, which again is totally normal and acceptable and responsible. I don't blame you for that. I don't blame any dog owner for that. But there's also ways that, like, what we do at our facility, and we have done in the past, we've done it in our videos, is we've tried to figure out what the dog's triggers are, what they like. Like, so many videos and so many times we'll take a dog that, their owners are like, oh, my dog doesn't like other dogs and blah, blah, blah. And that's totally fine. And then I'll try to, like, figure out what the triggers are, and actually show the dog owner, like, Actually, this is what you're seeing. It's more of a fear thing. And so many times we've done that where we get dogs on the fence, we have them meet, they're fine, they walk away. And I just kind of go over from what I'm seeing, like, oh, this is actually how your dog feels. And your dog probably just doesn't want to be. And, but again, so my answer and my thoughts on what you were saying is it's totally normal for you to feel like you're doing your dog injustice by not allowing them to go up and see all the other dogs like some dogs you may see do. That's totally normal. Like, don't worry about it. But also, I think that the way that you're handling your dog and the way that you're handling situations could be also predicating how your dog behaves around these dogs. So you could also be the sole reason why your dog isn't able to meet other dogs successfully, just because it could go either way. Like, your dog could not like other dogs, and that's totally cool. Or you could be the reason why your dog is reactive towards other dogs, making you think they don't like other dogs. So, but again, like, that's going to come from somebody being able to, like, walk you through that process and actually trialing it.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I've gone down that train of thought before of how much of this has to do with me, and could it be resource guarding? Could it be me just putting my guard up so much that he feels that, and then he tenses up around other dogs? Am I even giving him a chance to prove me wrong? I think that for me, the risk of that is not worth the reward of him having a positive interaction. And I think that comes down to sheer size. I mean, he's bigger than me. He's way stronger than me. And I think I kind of freak out, like, this could go well, but if it doesn't, oh my God, am I in trouble? You know, he's broken fingers. I fell numerous times flat on my face in the middle of winter because he's just too strong. He's too strong. And we're in a good place with our leash walking, but it doesn't take much for that to snap out. And then for him to just be like, you know, tunnel vision at whatever he wants. And then all that goes out the window. So I think, yeah, like sometimes I'll see a dog and I'll say, hey, maybe we can walk a little bit closer and see how Denver reacts. And then I'm like, oh, but if he pulls, I might as well just go the other way and just avoid that altogether. And like you said, working with a coach of some sort, I might be able to have some of those scenarios and have them be in a safe environment. And that could help, I think, a lot. But yeah, I think, you know, I've bitten off more than I could chew with this dog. And I think that maybe that's where some of these problems have just kind of been residually lying there for me to think about and, you know, keep me awake at night. And it's he's a big boy. And I like you said, I think about the worst that's going to happen. And I think it's time for me to start working through some of those feelings and talking to someone about them and potentially having Denver in a position where he can have more positive reactions or interactions. But if he doesn't, that's cool too. I think that's what you've said has taught me. And I like to think that if you were to have met Denver, you'd be pretty proud because he's built really into the Tom Davis system. Sweet. I watch your videos, you know, every single day. And it, really, if someone could say, oh, you know, who's your dog trainer? I would love to say you, because you have been that. And he's a good dog, and I've learned a lot. And I think sometimes I gotta realize, like, some things are gonna be beyond me. I can't make him smaller. He's not gonna wake up tomorrow and be 50 pounds instead of 130. But what can I do to make our life as great as it can be? And I think that's what this conversation has taught me. And I knew the conversation would go in this direction, and I might not focus on, you know, specific scenarios, but focus on the bigger picture of how to build a better relationship with him and give him the opportunities to show me that he can be who I know he is. But this has been fantastic. I'm really grateful for this. This has just opened my eyes to a lot. And I know you work with, I see all the dogs that you work with. There was that Boer Bowl that you worked with, that video is That really resonated with me. That really hit home with me. And I remember I cried in that video, watching that video, because I saw Denver in that dog. And, I saw that the amazing owners, walking through the woods, and I felt that hit, and, seeing another person and clenching and getting the leash really close to me, and trying to hold the whole dog's weight on me so he doesn't go at another dog. I felt all that. So, just getting to speak with you has been, it's kind of well, ra it's rounded out all those feelings I've had in the videos, and gave me a lot of clarity about my dog training experience. So really grateful.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad that that's what it is. And even that video there, the Borbal in Montana, that was like a, that was a situation where just just the wrong match. Like they shouldn't have had that dog. They do. So, it my job isn't like there's some people out there that are like, you need to get rid of this dog. I'm like, you can't like I'm a see, that's the thing about me is I'm a dog owner lover first before I became a professional. So I know what I would do if somebody looked at me and said, you need to get rid of your dog. I'd find somebody else to help me, So I'm not that guy, and because it just I don't think it's beneficial. Now, if somebody were to ask me, hey, I'm 65 and not really that mobile, do you think I should get a Borbal? I'd say, no, don't get a Borbal. Get a Lab. Get a Chihuahua. Get a Shih Tzu, but if you want, we can dive in a little bit to some of the granule stuff of how you're handling the dog and go through that if you want. It's up to you.
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay. Cuz I agree, like I think you understand the overall, like, hey, it's okay if your dog doesn't like other dogs, and hey, it's okay to feel the way that you feel, because every dog owner who has a reactive dog feels that way. They're like always like, oh shit, is something gonna happen? I don't want anything to happen. And I think, again, it's human and it's normal for you to do that. And I wouldn't beat yourself up over that, because even I do that like all the time. Even just at Christmas the other day with my own family, I'm like, I always talk about like a micro and a macro, like a little and a big. And people don't realize that it's not the carrot that you're giving my dog, it's the situation you're putting my dog in with the other dog. And people don't realize that. And I'm like, So when you go out with Denver, what is this look like? Like, you go out the door, what is your routine? What do you do?
So our days, the morning, he gets a leash walk. I get the prong on, get the e-collar on, put the e-collar around my neck, the remote. I get his collar on, I get the safety clip,
What
get
type
that
of
whole.
prong collar are you using? Like a Herm Springer? Okay, do you know what size it is?
I've had a hard time with sizing. I don't know the size I'm using right now. I think it's by numbers, right? So I'm pretty sure it's like a five. It's
It's
big. It's almost too big, I think.
do you Yeah, because that's going to be important. Like when you're out and you're handling him, it's going to be important for you to make sure, like if that collar isn't sized right, you're going to be probably wasting a lot of your time. So that's something that I always make sure dog owners are like really mindful of. Do you have it there?
I have it downstairs.
Do you want to grab it so I can? Yeah, I'd like to see, because
Absolutely.
you might have if your sizing of your prong is wrong, like right now, you need to go out with as much control and power steering as you can to help with your ultimate problem, which is your confidence. So I'd like to see what that looks like.
Absolutely. I'll go run
Cool.
and grab it.
Yeah, no
Is there anything
problem.
else that I should bring, or
If you
that's
want to,
good?
if you want to, if he's there, if you want to show me how it fits on him, that would be the most helpful, so I can see if make sure it's fit right. Yeah, cool.
Absolutely. Okay, I'll be right back.
No problem. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, okay, that's what I figured you had. I don't know for sure until I see it on him, but that could be like the 4 point something. I can't remember what it is, but yeah.
It's big, and obviously, I mean, you've worked with a lot of mastiffs before, or massive mixes. He's got a lot of extra skin, or like neck skin. So that's why the sizing has been even harder for me, because I worry that it's choking him if it's too tight because of all that extra flab that's got going on there. But I'll put it on him and here, he's it. And I will show you. All right, so this is him. Dens, come here.
Oh,
Sit.
it's cute.
All right, so a little low here.
Yeah.
So this is where I have it.
Okay. Yeah, so that's a good collar. That's like a really nice collar. I would recommend a 3.2.
3.2.
Yeah. So you can get a and that you could get a 3.2 Hermspringer. So it's the collar that you have, it's just a little bit smaller. And the reason that is because when you have like that's a I call that the lion tamer. It's a really big collar.
Okay.
And it's not going to give you the power steering that you might need, because
Right.
that is going to be a very strong, powerful collar. It's going to be a stopper, but it's not going to give you, yeah. So like, see how big it is compared to your hands?
Yeah.
It's like the links are ginormous. So I would recommend getting like a 3.2, because
Okay.
the 3.2 like is going to give you finer prong collar communication. It's going to be a little bit more defined. It's going to be a little bit more precise, because that thing is like I said, that's not a bad collar. That's not the wrong collar. But when you're working on your handling and your control, you're going to find more precision and more reaction from the dog and more response from the dog with a smaller collar, because you're going to have more points of pressure on the dog's neck. He's very sweet. He looks
Yeah.
like a golden retriever mastiff. That's it. Like he's very sweet. Aw. So if you use a smaller prong collar gauge, so they call that the gauge. So what you're measuring is like the diameter of the prong collar itself. So the gauge of the wire. And so if you used a 3.2, you're gonna have two prong collars for probably like every one of yours. So you're going to have more power steering and you're going to have more control. So when you go out and you flick your wrist or you do a correction, you're going to have more points of pressure on the dog's neck, which is going to ultimately give you that snappier, like, hey, pay attention that you need. The one that you have, again, is a good collar. It's not the wrong collar. It's just you need precision over power, and that collar is all power. That is a big like showstopper. It's not gonna break. So, but I always tell people, like, if you have a safety clip on a dog like that, like I would use the 3.2. You can get them to like you can get them in Kurrigan. You could get them in black stainless steel. So they have like a Kurrigan is like basically what looks like their rose gold. And I believe we have some on our website at buynobaddogs.com. So if you just type in like buynobaddogs.com, you can see it. We have them on our site. They're a little bit more expensive than the traditional stainless steel, or I'm sorry, than the chrome plated. The Kurrigan doesn't have any nickel in it, so it doesn't leave. Some dogs are sensitive to nickel. They're like have an allergy to it, and then some dogs also like just do better with like a Kurrigan. So I would get the 3.2 or 3.0 Kurrigan with your safety clip, and then that's going to give you a lot more control. Like
Yeah.
you'll see a huge difference, because what you want is okay. So that's good. So I want to continue to dive into your routines and the things that you do when you think shit's about to hit the fan, when really it probably isn't. Okay, so that's good to know. So I would get that, switch that collar up,
Cool.
start working on that. You'll see a significant difference. It would be like, I don't know how to explain it, but it would be a big difference. It's like you have a resistance band against you right now with that bigger collar. I would use the smaller one. Okay, you put the prong on, you put the e-collar on. What are you using the e-collar for when you're out and you're training, like on your walk?
I use it, to be completely honest, mostly for his prey drive when he sees a squirrel or a rabbit. I mainly use the vibration when it comes to that because he really doesn't like the vibration.
Right.
And I tell him to leave it, and I use the vibration to get his focus off of whatever he wants to chase. And then I redirect him. We usually turn around and go the other direction and try to forget that that thing was ever there, because if he does fixate and he goes, my finger will break, which is usually what happens because I hold the leash, and this is a very bad thing that I do. And I'm sure you see it with other clients, but I pretty much wrap the leash around my hand, and when he pulls, he crushes my fingers. But that's where I feel safe, is when it's like that.
So totally understand. Like a lot of people, that's what I'm saying though, is like this is where you need like a coaching type of thing, because so we're developing right now, we're developing a online training program with me.
Oh.
So this is like a consulting service. It's really helpful to a lot of people, but we're creating an online program where I'm actually meeting with you once a week and we're going over footage and I'm pointing things out. Like so I'm only one person, and how do I, 'cause that's the thing, is like there's so many people that we're trying, and we've been trying to figure this out for years. I'm like, let's just keep putting out free stuff on YouTube, but there's still like missing gaps, right? Like you've watched every YouTube video, or you've watched a lot or whatever, and so it's like you still have missing gaps. And so we are creating this in the future. We're hopefully wanted out by the end of February, and so that'll be helpful for you just in the future. But if you need more like expedited services, you could also in the future we could do this. Again, I know your boyfriend bought it for you for a gift or whatever, but if you did it again, you could send me over like clips of you working, which isn't as it's going to be, it's more helpful than it is now because I don't know what you're doing right now, but it'll be more helpful. But the way that the new program is working is we'll have like this whole powwow like once a week, and we'll go, it's like a package deal. Anyway, that's happening in the future, but re regardless of that, you want to make sure that when you're holding the leash, these are the like little things that I would see. Your objective is to correct the dog before they even get to the point where they can pull. So when you're heeling with the dog should be at your heels, and when they cross your leg, like when his chest cross your leg, that's where you should be correcting, like at that moment. And you should hear your prong collar go like this. You should hear it kind of like the chain snap. And that's where a lot of people, again, like have this misconception of the prong collar, that it's supposed to just, when the dog pulls, it pulls back, and that's like what it does. And that's not it. The prong collar is actually supposed to be used as a proactive instead of a reactive tool. So you're supposed to be correcting the dog before they get to that point where you have to hold on. So right now what you're doing is you're like tightening up the reins, and then when the dog pulls, you're just hanging on. So two things are happening, is the dog isn't learning that what they're doing is wrong by pulling because you haven't corrected the dog, you're just holding on, which the prong collar is helpful, but it's the same mental circumstances as like using a harness. Like it's not teaching them that what they're doing at that moment is wrong, it's just giving you a little bit more leverage to hang on. So you want to make sure that when you're going out with him, that you're working on these stop and goes and these directional changes and things like that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, I feel like for a long time since I started using it, the prong collar has been a survival tool for us. It hasn't been a training tool. It's been the prong is the only way my dog doesn't get off his leash and towards whatever he's after, because I can stop him most of the time. But it's because I'm putting that constant pressure on the prong. It's not, I'm not do like that snap is, it doesn't come naturally to me because I don't feel strong enough to do it. And I think a lot of that has to do with this prong is huge. It's a heavy tool as it is. And then it's got that pressure on his neck and he's got all the neck fat. And then I'm just kind of yanking it to get him away from something rather than that snap, leave it, or, you know, whatever it might be, the command that I'm going along with that correction. And it's not working. It's just making do. And it's just a survival tool. And when you speak about the prong and the way that you are, I can identify that I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it in the way that the tool is meant for. I'm doing it so I have leverage over his strength. And that's going to not really bring a lot of good to our leash walks, because I think he knows that too. He's not feeling the correction, he's feeling constant pressure. And when I'm holding him for dear life on a walk and he's feeling that constant pressure, I don't think he knows when it's a correction. Even when I try, I don't think it hits to him, and I don't think he registers it as a correction or as doing something that he shouldn't be doing. I think he's like, oh, the prong's on, I'm just gonna be, you know, yanking on this my entire walk and probably choking myself to some extent, and that's not good. So
Yeah, but
yeah.
it'll yeah, no, exactly. Home run, definitely. But also that will also tell you that like he's not engaged with you. And so right now you guys are going out, he is being a dog, and then you're scanning the environment to make sure nothing pops up. And so that's a terrible way to be living just in general with your dog, because you're not enjoying your walk when the walk should be your most enjoyed thing that you do with your dog. You know what I mean? And like right now, you're going out and your dog is literally, you're just hanging on, and you're hanging on with anxiety of like, hopefully something doesn't happen wrong. And that's, I'm just telling you that things could be a lot better. You just need the right coaching on how to make that happen, because you're not in a good place to learn. And the good thing about and what I mean by that is you need somebody to grab the leash and say, hey, look, this is what you can do. You know what I mean? And that's going to give you all the confidence in the world. And that's really what you need, is a capable person to do that. So again, like when you go out, your dog should be engaged with you, looking at you, paying attention to you. So some exercises that you can start doing. Are you familiar with like the drawback recalls and the inside and outside turns and stuff?
Yeah, a little bit from your videos, but I'm gonna be very honest. We don't work on stuff like that much. I more so just try to keep him in heel, and when we do any type of turnaround, it's because we're running away from something. So no, we're not that familiar with it.
So you have to, like, I want you guys to thrive in your relationship and create a better trust and create a better just meaning of life for you guys. Like right now, it's very like, again, like hang on, like oh shit type of stuff. And it doesn't have to be like that. You just don't know how to do it yet. And so one way to start doing that is literally when you walk outside, say his name and just backpedal. So you say, Denver, come. And what you want to do right now is you don't want to try to keep him in a heel his whole walk, because you'll fail. Like nobody can do that, including him. So don't try to keep him in a heel the whole time. You should be very black and white with your heel and your brake, making sure that he earns his brake and that he gets his brake and he understands the brake is much different from the heel. So that's what I would be working on is directional changes, recalls, things like that, because that's what's going to keep the dog engaged with you. Right now, again, he's going out and you're both in a bad place, probably. Like he's probably going out and he's like, oh, I don't really know what to do, and he's like suspicious, and then you're kind of like, oh shit. So I want you to make it more about you two. Like when you go out, like draw back and call him, Denver, come. He comes to you, and then you pay him with your food and whatever. But make sure that you're not trying to heal him for 15 to 20 seconds, and then give him a break, and then let him break for as long as you want, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. And then, okay, Denver, heel. And then you slide him back into the heel. But these are the things that you have to start. That's what I mean, is like you need a whole reset. Like fundamentally, your problems are also the lack of like basic handling. Like if you can't go out and communicate with him and teach him new things and make him feel secure with obedience, it's kind of this perpetual like recycled thing, unfortunately. So, okay. And I think the pager is good to use how you're using it as far as like an oh shit button. If he decides to go A-wire, that's a good way to use it. But you can also, I worked with this dog in when we were on tour in LA, and this younger couple had this gigantic, beautiful German Shepherd, and he was huge. He was probably 100 pounds plus, which is big for a Shepherd, like full bred, like working line, big boy. And he, the owners, they, I can't remember how old the dog was. He was more than a year old. I think he was intact, and he was just, I mean, when I'm working with dogs, I can get a sense of, like anything else, right? Doesn't matter if you're a dentist, a masseuse, a hairstylist, any type of service, you work with so many, as soon as you touch the client, you can tell, like, this is what this is, you know what I mean? And so when I'm working with dogs, it's the same way. I'm like, this dog was really nice, like really, really nice dog. Not in a sense of like friendly nice, but in a sense of like, this dog was really balanced and just like, I could just feel. I mean, it's why I do what I do, is I just have this like feeling, and this dog was like super sound, like really nice dog. And they just couldn't control him. He was 100+ pounds, giant dog, intact, working line, no outlets. What, they weren't playing tug with him. They weren't playing ball with him. He just didn't know what the frick to do. So when I got the leash, he was just like, just tell me what to do, man. I'll do it. I'll do whatever you want me to do. But they were having a hard time with reactivity because the mom or the owner was probably 100 pounds soaking wet, 5'5", like very like petite, small woman. And every time she would get the dog would go crazy at the end of the leash. And so he wasn't mean or aggressive, but he was reactive. And so anyway, my point is I ended up saying, I worked with this dog for like 2.5 days. And I remember for the first time in the States, sometimes I'll do this if I'm in a different country teaching. It was the first time in the States where I was like, is there any other dog trainer in here that can help these guys as I attend like the other clients? Because I couldn't, they needed very particular handling skill sets to handle. This dog was just too much for him. This dog outweighed both of these guys. He was super intelligent, too much dog. But like you said, like same thing you said in the beginning of you're like, I always wanted this big protective dog. And it's like the big protective dogs need a solid driver, you know? They need somebody that really like, you know, it's like getting a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. You're like, okay, now you got the supercar. Like, do you know how to drive it? And it's like, nope. I'm used to driving not this, you know? So anyway, I ended up working with the dog with the e-collar for healing. So I replaced the leash pops with a corrective level on their remote collar, which I think they had like a Dogtra something, 1900 or something. But so that's one thing you could do too. And again, like it's a whole project and things like that. But that's one thing you could do as well, is I was like, okay, they can't. Like it's just too much. And so I ended up replacing the leash pop with a like level 6 or 7. So every time the dog would cross my leg, I'd go, and I would use the stimulation, not the pager, because the pager is like that, oh shit, very corrective. And the stimulation has such a big spectrum that you can really dial. That's a beauty of like using modern remote collar training, is you can dial it in really nicely. So anyway, that's a thought too in the future. As you go off on this path of working with your dog and create, I just truly think that you guys can have the relationship that you deserve, as well as, cause I can just feel and see, your frustration and your care for this dog. And I think he has all the potential. You just don't know how to start the engine yet. And I think once you figure that out, everything is going to change for you and him. Yeah.
Thank you. That really resonates. Everything you said just about that couple with the German Shepherd. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's too much dog, and to find the tools to help navigate that. And Denver, I have no doubt, that dog loves me. Like, he loves me, he takes care of me. I try to do the same for him. But sometimes, like, love isn't enough. Like, that's in every sense, every relationship you can have. Sometimes love just isn't enough, and you have to work harder in other areas to build trust and build connection and build safety and stability. And I think that's where we're at right now, is the love is there. Like, I know he loves me, I know I love him, but what else? Like, what else can I do? And you've given clarity to a lot of those things, and just building that relationship with him is going to be key for him having a well life. So,
I just think right now that you're, yeah, exactly. Like, you guys have all the love. You just don't have like the very granule how-tos, 'cause you're, and I get it. Like, you're worried about him making a mistake. You're also worried about you doing the right thing. So you're going out, and what you need is, you need to go out and have control, and you need to go out and have clarity and a lot of assertive, like, hey, this is what we're doing, this is what we're going to do. And right now you're just going out and hanging on. And so you're never going to be able to get better that way. And in your head, it's like, well, I have the prong collar and I have the e-collar, but you're using those tools as desperate measures of just keeping everybody safe. And I want you to be using them as, like, you're using them as, like, you get a Swiss Army knife and you're only using the screwdriver. Like, you have so many different things that you could be doing with those tools with the dog. And I think once you, again, like, work with somebody, I don't, I'm, we are going to Canada next year to train. I don't know where we're going to go because it's such a big place and I'm very ignorant to what Canada is. But I get the most requests for Canada, just in general. Like, out of everywhere, it's Canada. I don't know if it's the lack of training or whatever, but Canada is my number. Canada and probably Netherlands is like my number one.
Wow.
Like, this is where you need to go. And we are doing Netherlands next year too, so we're doing both. But anyway, so homework is going to be, get yourself a new prong collar, work on your, like, stop and goes. So, and if I have time today, I'll try to find you a video to send over that has specifics on that. But
Amazing.
work on your stop and goes, work on the dog paying attention to you, work on that engagement that you're missing. Like, you should stop and your dog should stop with you and look at you right now. Like, don't be going out and holding on, like, and use that pop, like, on the collar, like, snap that leash right when the dog gets past you. 'Cause that's that, like, hey, no, nope, wrong. That's like hitting I always tell people, like, when you're driving and you hit the little rivets on the side of the road, you correct over. So work on that. And then, again, I think in the future, what you could do is, we are going to do that online portal. If you don't find somebody between now and then, it's something that a lot of people have asked about. It's something that I wish I could do. Like, in this situation, I'd love to be like, hey, talk to you next week for a follow-up. So it is something that we are doing this next couple months. We're working on it right now. And then in between that, or that, you could find somebody that you feel comfortable with training to put in the work to help you and coach you along the way to figure out, how to connect you from A to B.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm really interested in that program, that virtual training, like, recurring session program. I will keep an eye out for that. And in terms of now booking something for the future, I'm totally wanting to do that as well. So would I just use the virtual booking platform you have to just book another session, and that's just as easy as it is, eh? I just do that like that.
You can. And what I'll do is, I don't know. I can send you a quick email to the email. I think it was your boyfriend's email, possibly. I can send you an email. The only reason why I say 30 is because if you do anything longer than that, it's a pain in the ass for, like, Google downloads and stuff. So just send that over to that email, and then when we come on live, I can pull them up on my computer and I can watch them in real time and show you, like, hey, look at your hands, look at your shoulders, look at what you said. And that would be, to me, like, in my opinion, that would probably be, like, the most beneficial, effective next step for you, is to just go out, film the top things that you're really struggling with, book another session, and then when we talk like this again, I'll be able to pull them up and show you exactly what we're talking about.
Absolutely. I can totally do that, and really appreciate you even wanting to work with us again.
Sure.
It's a phenomenal opportunity being all the way in Canada. And, you know, if you do make it over here and anywhere close to me, I will travel. That's 100%.
Cool.
But for now, the virtual is really just, it's unreal. So really appreciate the opportunity, and I can take those videos, and I really look forward to chatting with you again and to getting Denver and I back on the right track. And I want to be a success story. Like, I want to be those people that you talk about that, you know, they have come a long way and, you know, things are so great. Like, I want to feel like that. And I know it's going to take a while to get there, but I believe it's possible. And yeah, just really so appreciate you and everything you do. And it's made a huge difference on my life. And now just getting to meet you is just the next step in that journey and working with you with Denver. So really appreciate it, Tom. You're the best.
No worries. Appreciate it. Yep. Good luck. Just go out there and start working hard. Order that collar. And again, just work on your stop and goes. I'll try to think of something today that I can send you over, that I can, like, a video demonstrating some things, and we'll go from there. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast. We're going to get into your dog training questions. 5-star review from 92 Henry. Inspirational. I've been following you for a few months or so, and I appreciate all the knowledge you share absolutely for free. I listen to your podcast while I'm at work every day. Thank you so much. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate it a lot. Next one comes from Serenica, Animated Roddy. Tom, I love your podcast and your knowledge. I've been working with dogs in one aspect or another for a couple decades, along with constant dog parenting of my own. Like you, I have been gifted with the ability to communicate and understand for the better. Listening to your podcast, I've been able to understand and recognize this gift and help my community by finally having the ability to explain some things I never had to put into words. And so you have a gift, not only with dogs, but also with explanation. I hope to find the time to watch your YouTube channel, but a lot of my days are spent driving all over from different appointments, so my eyes are occupied elsewhere. Anyways, love the podcast. My struggle question is this. I recently heard a podcast where you gave advice to someone who wanted to speed up their dog's response to commands, but I'm having the opposite issue. I have a 2-year-old Rottweiler who is intense with everything that she does. We have great obedience, understanding verbal and nonverbal commands, and she is stim fluent as well. Recall on point, heel to die for, she does what I ask, but I can't put into words her intensity of compliance. She has literally broken my toes when I've asked her for a down too close to proximity, and she doesn't just go for her place, she goes to her place, sprint and slide the whole bit. I worked with her on the leash a couple months to try to pace her, but as soon as the leash is off, it's 100 miles per hour. I've run her ragged, and tried working with her, but she still goes 100% of the time with every command. Should I accept her enthusiasm and wear steel toe boots, put a bumpers around her place so she doesn't go through the wall? Do you have any suggestions? Also a note. You say that there are no quick questions. I'd like to disagree. Most questions are quick. The answers take time. Okay. So, I mean, my answer is yes. You're going to have to accept the enthusiasm and get creative to work around the things that you are finding inconvenient, because she's over enthusiastic. And I think any other thing other than being creative to help with the negative things that come with this is going to be not fair. So obviously correcting her and things like that wouldn't be fair. Putting a leash on her, you already tried to slow things down. So I would, yes. Like, if you're worried about her down and hitting your feet, then you need to be more mindful of where you're downing her in proximity to your, to you. It's the same thing when we work with, like, bigger dogs in general. We have to be very careful, or I shouldn't say that. We have to just be a little bit more mindful about what we're asking them to do because of their size. Anyway, so just make sure that you're, I think just getting more creative. So maybe using touch pads, putting the cot against a wall. So that way when she places, it doesn't slide all over the place. If she's hitting the wall, then yes, you'll have to use some sort of bumper, or you'll have to just get creative again with the cot, or just use a touch command instead. Like, if you want her to go to a position and instead of her sliding the cot or hitting the wall, just use a touch command. use a touch command on a flipped upside down bowl, a trough bowl that we use from Tractor Supply. That way she just goes and puts her two front feet there and then you're done. Same thing on like the down positioning. You can counter the way that we teach behaviors by slowing behaviors down or at least controlling them with like a box or with a touch command. So if you want her to down, you can put the touch in front of you. You can stand back 3 feet, touch, down, and she's in position. So yeah, I personally wouldn't recommend trying to decrease the enthusiasm because you might kick yourself in the future for doing that. I would just get creative to make it more convenient for you and her behaviors. Cool. All right, next one. I'm now a professional certified every user name taken 3. Hey, hello, Tom. I've been a huge fan of you as a trainer for the last few years. I've also had the eye for training and natural instinct with my training when it comes to animals. Having a verbal and visual map of what it's doing and naturally strengthen my training capabilities to the point where I went full-time as a trainer this year and I'm more successful in rehab than ever. I can't put into words how much you've helped me and motivated me. Thank you so much for having the passion for dogs and the stuff that you give away, this information. You're an incredible coach and a friend to all dogs. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Amazing. Thank you so much. I'm going to share that on my Instagram. That's an amazing testimony. They're all amazing, but that one... it's really nice. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. All right, next. A very educational 5-star review from Block 109. Really enjoyed the podcast ever since getting our German Shepherd puppy. I have been trying to consume as much training content as possible, and this podcast really helps. I'm going to start e-collar training over Christmas break, and I'm very excited about it. Do you think a dog could be too old for e-collar training? I have an 8 to 10-year-old terrier, and I would really love for her to have the opportunity to be off-leash and have a great recall. She is healthy and active with no medical issues. The answer is yes, absolutely. I think you can absolutely teach an old dog new tricks, if you will. You just get back down to the basics, like I always say, teaching the dog touch, place, down, using low-level stimulation with tons of positive reinforcement will give you the opportunity to do exactly that. So just take your time, spend a couple weeks on conditioning, make it fun, be consistent, and absolutely you can. So thank you guys so much from the bottom of my heart for listening to this podcast and making it the number one dog training podcast in the United States. Appreciate you guys so much. And don't forget, if you guys want me to answer your questions as listeners, go on over to the iTunes review chart, leave your review, and I will answer them next week. All right, you guys, thank you so much. Have a happy new year if I don't talk to you. Okay, bye.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.